Greetings and welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is Jeff Phillips Wieferson coming at you from North Central Tasmania. I'm really sorry that it's taken me, it's been 3 weeks or more since I've been able to do a brand new show. I've recorded several parts of shows in different parts of Tasmania, where I've been since the 12th of March at the Hobart Botanical Garden, at Mount William National Park, where I was for the equinox, very remote, one of Tasmania's least visited national parks, which makes it extra special, in the far northeast corner, and at the Tiagara Aboriginal Center on the sacred headland at Devonport. I'm now sitting by the river here, very close to the nest of a platypus that I can see pretty much every morning or evening, which is really, really special. It's a bit windy, but I'm sitting about a meter from the river. I'm trying to record this show. For the second half of the show, it's going to be these excerpts that I recorded over the past couple of weeks. And this is my basic take on what's going on with the whole, you know what, I can hardly bring myself to say the word coronavirus. Sorry for all the noise here. Seems like every vehicle that goes past on this road is either a hoon or some kind of industrial truck. So it seems like all the vehicles are just extraordinarily loud on purpose. But anyway, I'm very lucky to be here. Just talked with my friends on Great Barrier Island. There, things aren't really that different from how they would normally be. People's abilities to do this and that are maybe restricted a little bit, and people, only so many people can go in a grocery store at a time. But I'm still probably glad that I'm here in Tasmania with a nice place to stay with beautiful friends. We've got beautiful apples coming in. As far as I know, I think we can still drive to the beach. I haven't tried that in the past few days, but last week I was able to swim in the ocean 3 different times. And so, who knows where this is all leading, but to me, the main things are, no matter what, don't freak out. If you got to freak in a certain direction, freak in, but you don't necessarily have to freak in any direction. And if you've got time on your hands, which a lot of people do, even if you're worried about that you can't work and that you've lost your income and all this stuff, unless you're freezing to death or starving to death and don't have electricity or food or water, you've got a lot to be thankful for, because we've still got gravity, sunshine, and oxygen for free. And if you're alive and healthy, you've got the extraordinarily precious gift of time, which is maybe being forced on you, but it's a brilliant opportunity to do all those things that you've always wanted to do, except you could just never get around to it. So now, I'm calling it a global round to it moment, where you've now been given the round to it officially. That's the ultimate gift of this, the blessing in disguise of this whole scenario, is it's a round to it gift of time that people can use for things other than business as usual and running around like chooks with their heads cut off. I personally have very, 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 and may I repeat that once again, very serious reservations about the validity of any aspect of the official story with this whole thing. Least of all, that it's some kind of weird infectious disease that's running out of control. There's just so many aspects of it that simultaneously bear every hallmark signature of psychological warfare operations, and B, defy any kind of common sense knowledge or beliefs about biomedical issues, about diseases, about viruses, about all this stuff. And this is all bearing every clear trademark signature of whatever you want to call it, the powers that be, the New World Order, the wealthy elite, of them actually trying to implement their next generation of warfare against life, which is really what it comes down to. And they could never implement such totalitarian controls. If they just try to whip it out of the blue, people would go, what the fuck? We're not buying into all this shit. So they've had to condition us and get us afraid with this virus thing in order to make us submit to all these totalitarian lockdown measures and stuff, which, you know, people are saying, oh, this is going to be the new normal. And all the naysayers and all the doom and gloom and stuff like that. And I just don't really buy into it. I don't think that anything we can see at this point is necessarily going to define what the near future is going to be. Things can change. The whole fabric of reality and space-time is shifting and turning on itself. And the powers of creativity, the powers of our collective creativity working together to actually manifest realities that we might want, that are in harmony and in tune with the good of all of life. I think that's what this is a challenge for. So in some ways, people could go, oh, yeah, yeah, but this is just our own bad karma. You know, this is not the Atlantean discontinuity that I'm always talking about that would come from some kind of extraterrestrial source like a cometary impact. I think all that could still happen and probably is in the best interest of life, because humanity as a whole, we haven't shown the ability for self-navigation or self-control that is our true highest path. And so I think this is an initial lesson to us in showing that there are organizations and coalitions of people within our own species who are taking it on themselves to exert that control. Like, I mean, this, what we see is straight out of Zbigniew Brzezinski and the Club of Rome. Man is his own worst enemy. We have to foist all these fake social and environmental and ecological and now biomedical crises on humanity in order to get people to submit to the one world government that, yes, is what we need to solve all these problems and stuff. But they're not looking at it from the perspective of the benefit of all of life. They're looking at it from the perspective of consolidating all the financial and real-world resources with these elite at the top of the heap and everybody else reduced in numbers down to a population of slaves. I think that that's a very clear map of the underlying agenda that's at work. Jonas Salk, who is a very influential biomedical researcher who is credited with inventing the polio vaccine back in the, I guess it was the 1950s when he came out with that. He said in one of his books that I was reading, oh, probably about, I guess 30 years ago now, 20 or 30 years ago, it was either called Anatomy of Reality or The Survival of the Wisest, but he's talking about how these are sort of like big picture looks at on the existence of human life on the earth. And he said that humanity is going to eventually divide itself into two camps. And again, this is a generalization, but it does make a lot of sense. He said that humanity is going to be divided into the people that are not capable of controlling themselves, of self-regulation, which is really the true meaning of what cybernetics means, or Kubernetes, the navigator of a ship. That's what cyber really means, the science of self-navigation, self-control, the ability or process of doing that. But the people that aren't able to do that are the ones, I mean, again, it's a matter of degree, but the people that are capable of self-regulation and self-control and self-navigation, they're the people who have been able to constantly seek out and refine and live on their highest path in terms of what it means to be here in every possible way. And I'd like to count myself as one of those people that have been consciously trying to determine and ask for the highest guidance in order to know and to determine and create what my highest path is. And I think that makes a lot of sense. So in some ways, everything that's happening right now with the coronavirus stuff can be looked at as a sort of a comic clampdown, a slap back in the face to people that have been ignoring their own higher calling of self-regulation or self-navigation and relinquishing directly or indirectly, consciously or unconsciously, the responsibility for being a crew member here on Spaceship Earth to just being nothing more than a passenger, or if not even excess baggage. And so this is a way that the universe has used to get everyone's attention. Maybe not everyone, but a lot of people. And I was jokingly saying, like, the mind share grabbing ability of this whole thing has exceeded the JFK assassination, when O.J. Simpson killed his wife and then fled on TV, when JR's last romantic misadventure on Dynasty. I mean, you can name a million different things. When Elvis died on the toilet, and when I Dream of Jeannie, Barbara Eden, popped her top on the show, which as far as I know never really happened, but if it did, it would get a lot of mind shares. All this is sort of captured, and praise the Lord, we're not hearing anything about climate change. Oh my God, when's the last time you even heard those words? So it's just like now. It went from the fire, especially here in Australia, the fires of climate change being fanned higher and higher and higher and higher, culminating in the big old bushfire thing here in Australia, which was clearly an example of geoterrorism, false flag, environmental warfare. All of a sudden, in the past couple of months, climate change totally eclipsed by coronavirus. So they're really just two fingers of the same hand of this orchestrated reality. With a lot of it, the central factor in all of this is the mass media, the mass communication factor, because without that, it just wouldn't work. I mean, people would be walking around clueless. They wouldn't know what to be afraid of. They wouldn't know which direction to be herded into. So without the mass media, or even without, we could still have the mass media, but without people's blatant addiction to it and their complete uncritical assimilation of it, without that, none of this would, they wouldn't even try all this stuff because it just wouldn't work. You can't control people that don't watch your television show. So that's why all along I've been saying for 30 years that people just shut off the TV and the radio and did their own thing, be a lot better off, and you'd probably find yourself in the right place at the right time at times like this. Anyway, I'm not going to go into too much detail about why I think that there may or may not even be a quote-unquote coronavirus. There, something's going on, but we've got, so many people are doing very in-depth analyses of the, for example, that any tests for this thing are giving probably at least an 80% false positive. So that means that 80% of all the cases are not that at all. And also, anybody with any kind of thing that they would normally have, flu, colds, pneumonia, which is a lot, that could easily be all put into the coronavirus bin, or purposely and or accidentally labeled as that. And so how would anybody know, with all the panic and the terror and stuff like that? And then there's the connection with the 5G radiation, which I think this is actually really, really huge. And I was warned about millimeter waves by my friend, a researcher named Vernon Rogers, who lived in Boulder, Colorado. He was a vibrational medicine researcher working under a grant from the Carnegie Mellon Foundation. This was huge. And in 1990, he warned me about the dangers of what's being done at the military level with millimeter waves. So now they're rolling this all out, and it does have effects on the oxygen, which has effects on people's breathing. And so I really do think that the implementation of this 5G thing, which is about, I guess it's a weapon of depopulation, but also probably mind control too, controlling how people think. I mean, all the stuff where the scientific levels of the engineering behind are this, science fiction levels for sure. But so to me, regardless of all the social distancing and all that stuff, you're not likely to get this thing, no matter what. Your best defense is to have a strong immune system and to be healthy and to think positive thoughts and not buy into all the fear. And you've got to obey all this bureaucratic stuff, but you don't have to like it. You don't have to believe it. You don't want to get arrested. But at the same time, it's obvious that this is all about distancing people from what they need to be healthy, mentally, physically, spiritually, ecologically. So I think the more time you can spend out in nature and being with the wind and the sand and the stars and the ducks and the birds and the turtles and the reptiles and the lizards and the snakes and the butterflies and the rocks and the grass and the beautiful apples and everything, the more time you can be with nature, the better. I don't think you can do too much of that right now. Go on long-distance bicycle rides if you can do that. It's possible that this could actually be a genetically modified bug of some kind that is relatively benign or dormant, but then when it gets hit by the 5G electromagnetic radiation, which is not only being rolled out in a lot of areas, apparently under cover of this thing as a smokescreen, but also any hospitals and police stations everywhere have always had the highest level of these high-tech, ultra-powerful transceiver communication systems and have been notorious for levels of cancer and stuff like that. And so that would make a lot of sense that anybody going into a hospital would automatically start exhibiting these kind of symptoms now that would give credence to the whole coronavirus hoax scare. So yes, this is a disaster, if you want to call it that, although etymologically the word disaster means a bad star. So it's got astronomical implications that relates with comets and all that different kind of stuff, which I really hope to be talking with astronomer and archetypal legendary comet researcher Victor Klub with in an interview soon. A disaster of human making. And it's not accidental, and it's being foisted by people on other people. So that's the kind of, it's kind of like a species planetary-wide, in the human world, an autoimmune disorder of humanity. It's like the Homo sapien macrovirus attacking itself, which is really what it's always been doing. But, you know, you can use biomedical, epidemiological, and etiological metaphors for this whole thing if you want to, which I think is very interesting, kind of an enlightened holomorphic systems theory approach, which I might elaborate on later. This show is kind of a hodgepodge trying to make up for lost time due to hecticity that I've been dealing with and stuff, but ultimately I'm sitting in the beautiful warm sunshine now. You can hear some vehicles of people still running around with their hoons and stuff like that. I'm sitting now, I'm no longer at the platypus nest. I'm about a few hundred meters away, sitting right at the base of one of two very, very giant redwood trees, Sequoiadendron giganteums, that I believe these must be probably at least 150 years old because they're significantly bigger than the biggest ones in the Hobart Botanical Garden. Those are just about 100 years old. So I'm sitting on a bed of needles from the redwood tree with my back against the tree with the beautiful warm autumn sunshine shining on me, recording this show. And I know a lot of people are distressed because of all this, but what does the non-human kingdoms think of this? And I've got Teddy, Wally, Ruby Ann, Big Teddy, Hottie Phil, Huckleberry, Snoocha, Freddy, Ellie, Crawly, Penny, Chickadee, Kylie, and Peter with me here right now, except for not Crawly and Penny and not Snoocha and Freddy. They're in Belgium, and Crawly and Penny are in a different part of Tasmania. But family, what do you reckon about this?
Oh, Raviups, well, we're quite distressed about it all, but ultimately we think Mother Earth's getting a break from a lot of civilized activities, and we think that a lot of people actually have a gift of lots of time on their hands where they can do useful, creative things that they never had time to before. And we can also give thanks for what we do have, and to realize how much of what we've been obsessed with we don't really need.
Family, you echoed my, that's exactly how I think. And I think it boils down to, if we just live by the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do or not do unto you, and live simply so that others may simply live. If we had been abiding by these all along, we would never have got to the situation we're at now. But now the universe has given us a big wake-up call.
Oh, yes, and big time.
Well, family, what do you reckon the redwood trees?
Wavy Ops, this is the big redwood tree sitting right next to you, and I just want to say that we're so with you with all of this, and Grandmother Boudicca over there, and Auntie and Cassie's, and your Eucalyptus and Macrocarpus at Rototai, and Grandmother Oak Tree at Sheffield, and all your tree friends. We're all with you now, along with the whales and dolphins. They're tuning in and sending everybody hymns and blessings through all this, because we love you, and we want the human race to be happy, member of family of Mother Earth, without hurting everybody else. So we never wished any bad or harm on you. We want you to get through all this as a learning experience and come out on the other side with everything good, so you can keep coming to see us and be with the beautiful beaches and oceans and swim with us in the ocean and everything.
Oh my God. Grandmother Redwood Tree, Sequoia Dendron Giganteum. Thank you for that. That is just so amazing to hear. But it's just a bit off the deep end.
Oh, Ephiops, that's just such an exaggeration. It's very off the deep end.
Yes, example for like people getting written $1,000 fines for surfing too close to each other in Byron Bay. It's just a bit insane. But I don't think... microbes are our friend, like Bill Bryson has so eloquently written about. Microbes are our friend, and without bacteria, we wouldn't be here, we wouldn't exist at all. So I think his message is very central, as well as the message of the Brotherhood of Death from William Ingall, talking about all the evil, evil, evil people and organizations that have plotted all through the 20th century on ways to kill their fellow man, because they think there's, do they really believe there's too many people and that we need to get rid of them? Not just by Planned Parenthood, but by active depopulation. Do they really believe this, that they're doing all this, they're trying to depopulate us for the benefit of the rest? Or is there a more dire agenda? Do they really believe in some kind of evil being that they're working for? Whether it's the devil, or the aliens, the greys, or the reptile beings like David Icke and all this stuff, or maybe it's the Pope, the Dark Pope, or the cigarette smoking man from the X-Files, or I don't know. I've been conjuring up every possible. I only use the word conspiracy theory as a joke because it's just such a morass of confusion, but a lot of stuff that does make a lot of sense gets put into that bin. And the same with a lot of science fiction movies like 12 Monkeys and the Andromeda Strain. A lot of that keeps coming to mind, as well as Stanley Kubrick's Doctor Strangelove. Like, you know, in my mind, my brain's kind of working on a Doctor Strangelove version of this whole coronavirus thing. And remember that song by The Knack called My Sharona? It went da 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 da. My Corona. That's what keeps going through my mind now. It's not My Sharona. It's My Corona. And so there could be the TV show called Corona Street in England instead of Coronation Street. Corona, the Corona Nation. It's all a joke. You can't take it too seriously. You've got to watch out for what's affecting other people. Not the disease, not the media artifact. You've got to watch out for the behaviors and beliefs of other people that are infected with all this stuff. So I think it's best to keep a light heart with it all. Don't take it all too seriously. Realize that we all are still alive. We're still alive. We're not going to be reduced to killing your neighbor for meat, because you will have already become a vegetarian. That just won't be acceptable. Maybe we're being called on to transform ourselves into photosynthetic beings, to where all we need is sunlight and some soil and some water, and our hair can become green, and we can stand there and photosynthesize and manufacture our own nutrients from all these without having to buy groceries and food and sitting down to eat. And if we don't have to eat, we won't have to poopy. So then, but if we get rid of eating and poopying, that's going to leave a lot of time for other stuff, like being an artist, maybe painting some rocks, maybe learning how to play the flute. Odell Borg's High Spirits flutes are all on sale right now. What could be a greater gift than that? Anyway, Alan Weisman wrote a really interesting book called World Without Us, and I've quoted at length the chapter on the whole nuclear scenario about how even like in hundreds of thousands of years from now, when there probably is not going to be people, at least not in the recognizable form that we are now, all our nuclear waste is still going to be there. It's going to be just as potent then as it is now, you know, so the world without us will be still at the mercy of that, unless some kind of geological, geophysical, tectonic event has rendered that safe and sound by burying it underneath a few kilometers of rock and soil. But there's a lot to be talked about here. I guess ultimately it is our karma to be undergoing this, but that can be experienced at the collective level, but also at the individual level. And I really think that the expression, the people of one heart, as spoken of in the Hopi prophecy, that's really being borne out now. And I'd really like to thank my beautiful friends for making me possible, who buy my art, give me money, give me places to stay, let me use their car, everything. I'm just so thankful and blessed to have everything I need right now in optimum circumstances to help my friends and catch up on a lot of artwork and writing and music and photography and all the stuff that I really need to be spend time working on. I've got that time right now. And still the ability to go to some remote nature areas and to sit with giant trees in the beautiful sunshine in one of the safest and cleanest places on the planet right now, central Tasmania. There's a lot to think about. You know, the whole idea of, did life come to the Earth from space? Or are microbes and life forms continually arriving here now? And so, in the same way that a lot of people never paid attention to the environmental issues, or especially the climate atmospheric dynamics, until the advent of the climate change thing. And the same thing now, nobody really paid all that much attention to plagues and diseases and epidemics and stuff like that, except for hearing it on the news that it was happening. It was always somewhere else. All this stuff, the disease outbreaks, the totalitarian regime clampdowns and stuff, this has always been somewhere else, in South America, in Africa, in the Middle East, in these remote, in Russia, in these remote countries with the evil regimes in China. But now, the difference now is it's all here and now, everywhere, which is another reason to really be suspect of the whole thing, the simultaneous global of like every single form of mass media, with echoes of Project Mockingbird, where the CIA undertook in the 1950s to take control of every form of mass media. Well, that's clear now. Clear. A lot of interesting hypotheses. But ultimately, it's us doing it. I don't even think it's the Martians, even though I jokingly said that Duncan Steele, the former asteroid and comet researcher who's now working for a satellite data company in New Zealand, who I interviewed, he has the idea of disseminating genetically modified organisms on Mars. which I think is like the rape of space. It flies in the face of all the protocols that astronomer Carl Sagan set in place about the necessity of ultra-sterilization of anything that leaves the Earth so that we don't accidentally contaminate another planetary body. And here Duncan Steele wants to do that on purpose, and I've jokingly said that, well, the Martians threw a wrench into that with all this. You know, so who knows? We've got the whole thing with all these tens of thousands of 5G satellites going up and the space fence locked down. And I think that there's elements of truth. I think that there are people that are trying to do all this stuff. But like this quote that my friend Craig Hume, my Yeti brother, sent, it's like someone was observing that he doesn't think that, I mean, sure, there are conspiracies, but that basically the world is rudderless. There's no single, coherent, organized conspiracy at work. And I think there's elements of truth to that. Ultimately, it's the conspiracy of our own refusal to accept our own responsibility for being here now. I think what happens in the immediate future is very much up to us. A lot of people are being called on now to wake up and realize that we do need to grab the rudder and start navigating our boat before we go completely right off the waterfall over the brink. So we don't have to keep on being the Homo sapien macrovirus. We could be the people of one heart. And now's the time to be, to shine forth with the most beautiful rainbows of spirit and sharing a community and giving and keeping on supporting each other. Keep on loving each other. Keep on doing all the cool things that we ever did. Don't let all this stuff drive a nail in your process. You know, keep on and shine even brighter. Turn up the amps, turn up the wattage. Logically, this is the comedy researcher in me. Logically, just like in my thing I wrote about Elon Musk using the U.S. military to eliminate the Earth's atmosphere because that's the only way to get rid of climate change. Logically and scientifically, the only way to make sure there's no disease in the human population is therefore there to be no human population. So get rid of the atmosphere, you get rid of climate change. Get rid of people, you get rid of disease. Ipso facto, verily it is written. So let's hope we don't have to take it quite that far. Anyway, stay sane, happy, healthy. This is Jeff Phillips on the brink here in central Tasmania, sending you love and light and beautiful love and hugs to Jewel Stanley at UCY-TV, plus everyone in Aotea, Aotearoa, to Te Iki o Maui, to Waipanamu, Jonathan and Michelle Beatty, Kate Burness, John and Peggy and Garlic, my beautiful friends in America, in Hawaiki, Rarotonga, North and South America, Wolfgang Kemp in Germany, and Selena in Samoa, and all my beautiful friends, Kim Hahn at Mount Yango, Paul and Julia, Selwood. I look forward to seeing all y'all again real soon. I think this is going to blow over sooner than we think. Signing off from On the Brink Radio, this is Jeff Wefferson. Love you.
Good day.
They've just released the ingredients of Bill Gates' new COVID-19 vaccine. This is a few of its ingredients, not necessarily in the order of their amount of composition, but I'm just going to list the first few dozen of probably several thousand ingredients, most of which are really long chemical names. We've got Roundup, Lysol, DDT, 1080, glue, three kinds of glue, super glue, Elmer's, and liquid nails. We've got some fluoride. It's going to have mercury, lead, arsenic, hexavalent chromium, and several other essential nutrient heavy metals. It's going to have several of the most carcinogenic radionuclides, including plutonium, americium, and technetium. It's going to have sugar, just plain old white sucrose, ultra refined. It's going to have rectose. Now, this is probably the most esoteric of the ingredients, rectose. It's the real butt sugar. More on that later. It's going to have insect parts, rodent hair, and some feces from different kind of animals, some mold spores, ionizable metallic salts. This is going to be so that your body will be an enhanced conductor for electromagnetic radiation in the same way that this stuff is in the chemtrails they're spreading in the atmosphere. It's going to have glow-in-the-dark stuff so that you'll be able to be seen at night. It's going to have some dust from the Grand Wazoo. That's from the Frank Zappa song, Cosmic Debris. It's going to have some bear bile extract. This is an ancient Chinese remedy for everything. It's going to have some bat phlegm. Now, this is from uncooked raw bats. It's going to have Eye of Newt, which is a traditional medieval medicinal potion. It's going to have gluten. You need that gluten. It's going to have some DMT, so you're going to see trails. You're going to be able to see through it all. It's going to have some assorted nanoparticles and some Morgellons fibers for fiber and some fiberglass. Yes, for extra fiber. It'll strengthen your inner surfboard. It's going to have some battery acid, some chlorine, some nail polish remover. This is all just in case. It's going to have some petrol if you need to sniff it. It's going to have caffeine and nicotine, a bit of carbon dioxide just thrown in there. It's going to have some fentanyl to ease the pain, some lithium and Prozac to lift your spirits, and some Thorazine to just kind of put you out of it in case it gets to be a bit much. It's going to have some MSG, monosodium glutamate, aspartame, and formaldehyde to make sure it never goes off. And probably most important of all, it's going to have the secret ingredient that was the mad scientist put in when he was making Milton the Monster on the cartoon show. He accidentally spilled the tincture of tenderness, and the whole vial of it went in there and made Milton, instead of being an evil Frankenstein monster, he was a big, gentle, goofy Gomer Pyle kind of guy. So the tincture of tenderness is the most essential ingredient in Bill Gates. I'm calling it the 667 vaccine. It's at the next level of evil. Right now I'm standing in front of an Aboriginal Yarning, that's Y-A-R-N-I-N-G, healing circle here next to the river. It's kind of like a medicine wheel. It's got about 3 meters in diameter of mosaic stones on the ground with 9 big pieces of, it kind of looks like granite, but it's not. I think it might be sandstone. 9 pieces arranged in a circle that you can sit on. And in the middle is a sort of a circular piece of metal with a really cool holes etched in it. It looks like the patterns of ripples of water and little spots. And this is the metallic cover for a fire pit. And so this whole little installation was designed by Auntie Dawn Blaisley. She's a Tasmanian Aboriginal elder who I actually met her on Flinders Island in 2013 at a shop in Whitemark. We started talking, and she was there visiting from the mainland of Tasmania. She was looking for her grandmother's grave. And she didn't know exactly where it was, but she had some clues. And so I went with her, and over a couple of days, we looked and looked and looked, and we found her grandmother's grave. And I made some painted rocks, and we did a little ceremony and stuff like that, and we kept in touch. And she's quite a talented artist. And a year or two later, I saw some of her paintings here in a gallery, and I've been trying to get in touch with her. But so anyway, I'm right at her Yarning circle, which is, I'm reading from the plaque here now. Sitting on the land in a yarning healing circle, sharing stories and passing on knowledge is the traditional method of communication for indigenous cultures. The yarning healing circle is a space where all are welcome and the community can come together as one. Inspired by this deep-rooted tradition, Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal members of the local community, with the guidance and support of Aboriginal elders and Aboriginal community pathways, have created a yarning healing circle and fire pit to celebrate Aboriginal culture and provide a space that can be enjoyed by all. By sharing our stories and experiences in a relaxed and caring environment, we open lines of communication, allowing us to increase our knowledge and affect change in our daily lives. By encouraging communication, we discover alternative solutions, create greater avenues of choice, and instill empowerment. And it says they're limestone boulders used to conduct traditional smoking ceremonies, bears the motif of the Central Plateau. The stonework floor is a symbol of the reciprocal seasonal migratory customs of the Tasmanian Aboriginal nations.
G'day, this is Jeff Phillips. Wait, hold on, I'm not in New Zealand anymore, so I'm Jeff Phillips in here in beautiful Hobart, Tasmania. I've arrived here day before yesterday after a somewhat grueling trip from Auckland, and it took me about 36 hours. I had to spend quite a few hours trying to either be asleep or awake, but really neither, sitting in the dining area of a McDonald's upstairs at the Auckland Airport. But I'd really like to compliment everybody that I met in transport and buses, taxis, airlines, people of all different kinds. Even the Australian immigration people blessed their silly little hearts with even more hoops for me to jump through. But it all went perfectly, and everybody was extremely nice. And it was even people, especially in New Zealand, they were like reaching out to shake my hand. I mean, I'm always the one doing that, and only once in a blue moon does somebody not want to shake hands, but this time it's like people were volunteering to shake hands that probably normally even wouldn't, as if to say that they aren't afraid of the stupid coronavirus bullshit. And it's like, it's such an insane amount of media hype that's going on with all this stuff. I actually created a new word in honor of it. It's called CRYPE, C-R-Y-P-E, crisis hype. And it's not, it's a manufactured crisis, of course. This is the most heavily marketed pseudo crisis in history. It's like, I think people's TVs are going to start smoking if they hear the word coronavirus one more time. It just makes me cringe when I see it on the media and stuff. And how people can even be falling for all this bullshit is beyond me. The best way to protect yourself from it is to turn your TV off and your mass media, your radio, all this stuff. And just go about your business and be healthy and be nice. And don't freak out and don't worry about all the stupid bullshit about national emergencies and global pandemics and financial crises and all the shit. I mean, it's going to be, they're trying to manipulate people into succumbing to the agenda of the New World Order. It's plain and simple. And this whole thing, it's exactly the same thing as climate change. It's being marketed by the same factions in exactly the same way, only this is at the next level. So it's like the climate change thing, it's got all the exact same salient qualities. It's like an insoluble problem that regular, normal democratic governments just don't have the ability to solve this level of crisis. So we're going to need to submit to some kind of supernational, super powerful organizations that have the mighty computers and the ability to create new vaccines that'll cure everybody of all this shit that they don't even have. And it's just like, it's beyond belief. I mean, what staggers me is how many people are buying into all this. But it's been really refreshing. I've been so lucky, and really want to thank John and Renee Ringer for my beautiful 3 weeks there at Matapuri. Such an amazing time. One of the quietest, most secluded times I've ever had anywhere in terms of solitude and acoustic tranquility. And with the sort of the last minute, my Australian visa got granted. I sent it in at the last minute, and then they took a while to reply, but they did grant it. And so then I got a last minute ticket to Hobart, decided to come directly to Tasmania and start here at the crown chakra of the Rainbow Serpent in my first Chakras of the Rainbow Serpent painting. And it was just, it's been really, really cool. But I wanted to compliment all the transport people, especially in New Zealand, but here too. And even I flew on Qantas. Oh my God, I vowed I'd never fly on them before. But they were actually really, really super nice too. Everybody was super nice. I didn't really see that many people with masks. I maybe saw, out of the probably hundreds of people that I set eyes on, only, I'd say, two or three dozen had masks on. And not all of them were Asian. Most of them were. But the girl that sat next to me on my plane flight, or, it's funny, my friend, who's an activist in Australia and New Zealand, she looked at the photo of this supposedly a girl, and she said, she instantly said that this was a tranny, a transgender person, but she was a quite attractive blonde who had on a stylish black mask, and she was the only person on the plane that had one. She was sitting two seats over from me, or she, he, whatever it was. She did have really big feet. I did notice that, which is kind of unusual for a girl. And, you know, so whatever it was, but she claimed to be a model and actress, but she did take her mask off so I could see what she looked like. But, you know, I don't really care what gender it was. But anyway, the point is that not many people had masks, but it was funny. When I had to go, now this time, even though I had my visa approved ahead of time, which I wouldn't dare go to Australia without the visa, oh my God, and that would be like going to the moon without any oxygen. So it was all fine and dandy, but instead of letting my passport just scan and let me walk on through the automated gate like normal, this one goes like, oh, we're very sorry, Mr. Phillips, your passport can't be scanned. You've got to go to the desk and talk to the people. And there they were in their little uniforms. And it was funny, there was three of them, two men and a woman. And one man and the woman had a mask on, and the other, the younger dude that looked like he had some sense, didn't. And so they start asking me all these questions and blah, blah, blah. And then, but they're going through all the shit that I already covered in my visa application, asking me where I'm going to stay, do I have my onward ticket, which I luckily had. I mean, this has never really been asked for me coming into Australia before, and so I had it. But then he goes, ah, so do you have proof of funds to support yourself? And I just covered all this in my application 2 weeks before, and I go like, well, you know, actually, I don't. And he goes like, well, do you have any cash? And I go like, not on me. And I go like, he goes like, well, can you go on internet banking and show me your balance on your phone? And I go like, well, my phone's not connected. I'm in this kind of a SIM card limbo here between my New Zealand one won't work and my Australian one's not connected yet. I can't do that till I go into the Telstra shop and pay. And I think I've got a problem with the SIM card anyway. And so there's no way. And I didn't make a printout of my bank statement as I normally do. I always do that before coming into New Zealand, even though they've never asked for any of this stuff. But anyway, but he started kind of hassling me about this, and then just when I thought disaster was going to strike, all of a sudden he got nice, but I really want to thank my guardian angels for flapping their wings a little extra hard around this guy, because he started going like, well, what's the name of the person you're going to be staying with in Tasmania? And so he's going to help you financially, blah, blah, blah. And I go like, oh, yes, 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 and gave him all the details and all that kind of stuff. And then, as the final icing on the cake, he stood up and he lectured me through his mask.
Mr. Phillips, it's very important that you do not work. Do you understand that? This is a tourist visa, and you must not work. You must understand this. And if you work and get caught, it's going to be 2 or 3 years till you can come back in. And you get sent to a detention center and other forms of torture and mass murder might be subjected to you. And so I strongly recommend that you don't work.
And so I just nodded and I said, like, I love Australia, which is true, but I was so tired. I mean, this was like very much like the scene out of a comedy science fiction movie, some kind of weird. It was like Brazil being in a big kind of bureaucratic, dark open space with cavernous ceilings, and there was nobody else around. Everybody had already passed through except for me and these three immigration people who clearly had nothing better to do except enjoy their Hoops for Jeff sport. And so I must have stood there talking to him for like 30 minutes. Luckily, I had plenty of time to my flight to Hobart, but I was so tired. Like, I probably could have joked and said, like, well, you know, I said, like, well, is it okay to work on being a really good tourist in Australia? But I didn't want to push my limit. But I should have really asked him. I should have told him that my friend has a veterinary clinic for koalas, and that I was actually seriously thinking of going there to volunteer and see if I could help her in any way. Of course, not for money. And so, but I, that would have been a legitimate question that you can't really ask in an online application. So I should have asked those dudes this, but I was so tired. I hadn't had any sleep for over 24 hours at that point. Anyway, but I made it, got in, got my phone working, got some sleep, spent a couple of nights in Hobart, And then now I'm at the botanical garden with a beautiful giant ash tree that I've hung out with before. And I'm recording the show, and in about 3 hours I'm riding the bus up to Deloraine, where my friend from Sheffield's going to come and pick me up. She was a friend of my spiritual brother Rob Alliston, who passed away a year or two ago from Three Hummock Island, where I never got to go with him. Then I'm going to go and visit my friend Alfred in Deloraine, see some platypus, and hopefully take his car, Kemosabe, up to the Bay of Fires again. And then I'm continuing. I probably won't stay in Tasmania all that long, depending on what kind of art projects I might have to do. Then I'm going to go back to the mainland, visit the William Rickett Sanctuary. I got to see William Wilson's prom from the air. And also, oh my God, Victoria, the part we might have flown right over Mallacoota Inlet, the sort of the southeast corner of the Australian mainland, but it was quite black. Yeah, once we started flying over the land, it definitely looked burnt. And all the way to the coast, and you could still see bodies of water. I couldn't really get any detail from the elevation that we were at, but as we flew more over, I could see what looked like several huge mine sites, and this is in southern Victoria. You don't really think of Victoria as a place with a lot of mining, but I was surprised at these. They weren't the huge mega-scale things like the Gorgon Project, like something out of Dubai that you see in Western Australia, but they were still huge. And several of them, some of them had giant gas flares burning off. And then I saw Lake's Entrance with the giant bodies of water that was quite cool. But the land definitely looked burned, as it was. And so I'm going on a major healing expedition. When I come back to the mainland, I'm going to go hopefully to Apollo Bay and see some more king parrots and some koalas and my good friends there. And then I'm going to make my way over to the Flinders Ranges to visit Wilpena Pound. I'm going to go to Kangaroo Island. I'm going to go to Second Valley and get some more really nice rocks from the Songline there. Maybe visit this place called Victor Harbor. I'm going to go up to the Central Desert, hopefully do a new mural for the YHA at Alice Springs, and visit Uluru, Katajuta, and Attila, the three sacred peaks. Then I'm going to go to Darwin, Litchfield, Nipmuc, and Kakadu, and visit Gregor, Aquaria, Ochre, and Nimby, and Ursula and Greenie, and maybe Peter, Chumley, and Shaway, and then maybe Arnhem Land or Kakadu, and then go down through Western Australia, Kununurra, Broome, Carrageenie, Hammersley, Chichester Mills, Stream Python Pool, Mount Bruce, Kalberry, Kennedy Ranges, Mount Augustus I'd like to visit, which is a giant rock that's a lot bigger than Uluru. A big sandstone monolith, Pernalulu and Alquestro, the Bungle Bungles, hopefully to visit some Guion Bradshaw rock art, Wyndham, Kununurra, Derby, Denham, Denmark, Donter Castell, Carnarvon, Exmouth Cape Range with the brilliant sand dunes, Margaret River, Fremantle, Perth, Valley of the Giants, across the Bight, and then back to, hopefully I might be able to stay in Australia till July 1st to celebrate my 20th anniversary here. I'll go to immigration and jump through some hoops on the step of the immigration building. Then go back to Aotea, see John and Peggy Ann and Grandmother Pudakawa and Bandy. And then possibly go to the Big Island of Hawaii later in the year and visit some volcanoes. That's the plan for now. But it's very interesting because in the Christchurch Botanical Garden, it was a relief to actually be not alone, but with a small number of people that it's kind of like it always used to be until just about the past 3 or 4 years when it's just been literally completely overrun with Chinese tourists, groups of them everywhere. You couldn't turn your head any direction and not see groups of them walking around with their selfie sticks like herds of lost domestic animals. And just kind of blocking the area and everything. I had to yell at them to get out of my way on the bicycle path and all the stuff. And then Apollo Bay, oh my God. But see, but now I think things are lightening up in China, and so they might start coming back. But here in the Botanical Garden in Hobart, I mean, I'm just on the edge. I just got into it, and I'm recording the show at my first big tree friend that I've seen. But I'm seeing very few people, and I haven't seen hardly any Chinese at all, definitely no groups of them. So it's quite a relief, and I think that this whole thing with the coronavirus and the climate change thing and all this stuff, I mean, it's by design. It's what the New World Order, the Club of Rome, and all these think tanks and the people have been, they say in their own words what they've been planning to do. They're trying to undermine all the Western economies and reconfigure all the financial structure of the world. William Engdahl has talked at length about that. So now it's like, I've got the metaphor that came to me last night when I was going to sleep. It's like they're putting graphite control rods into the reactor of capitalistic civilization. It's slowing down all the reactions that have just been actually running off the rail with the greed and the materialism and the consumption and everything. And it's kind of like, in a way, it's actually probably a good thing. I mean, I'm not, it's definitely people's karma to be, to have all this stuff happening, to have these, the evil dictator overlords foisting all this stuff, but you don't have to buy into it. You don't have to panic. You don't have to go and buy up all the toilet paper. And by the way, there was heaps. There was like stacks of probably 10 different brands of toilet paper on the shelves in the Woolies here in Hobart yesterday. So they're laughing down here. They're not shitting themselves in Tasmania, which is what I like about Tasmania. But it's like, it's slowing everything down. And, you know, but like my friend Jonathan Beatty observed many years ago, there was an economic depression thing, and I think in 2008, and he said the air in Los Angeles was the clearest he'd seen in a long time because a lot of the shipping had stopped. And they were saying that about China because everything was shut down, or a lot of it was for a long time. The air quality improved. So ultimately, closing down a lot of the capitalistic industrial stuff is actually the best thing that could happen for Mother Earth. I mean, it's not gonna, this is just, it's not a long-term solution because all this stuff still exists, you know, and getting rid of the infrastructure. I mean, this is not something that we're capable of taking care of ourselves. But it's something that is happening. But it's also, I'd really like to thank my guardian angels and just my basic synchronistic patterns of life that always seem to put me in the right place at the right time. And it's just very interesting that I find myself right back into Tasmania, right at the exact, I mean literally at the exact instant of all the big apparent shit kind of hitting the fan. Like I was sitting in the airport in Melbourne waiting for my flight to Hobart, and I had to look at a TV screen because of where I was sitting. But first of all, it showed Scummo Morrison sitting there with his ghoulish grin. And also this guy Peter Dutton, I call him Dutturd, but I'd never seen him actually talk before, but they both look extraordinarily demented. They just look demented, and they're kind of fat, stupid looking, typical Australian. I'd like to see Sir Les Patterson do a piss take of these guys. But they're talking about, everything's about money. There are all these financial bailout packages for every Australian is now going to be able to get $750 because of the coronavirus. And I'm like, wow, they're paying people to be sick. Okay, but I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. I mean, the whole thing about the coronavirus. There's an Asian dude with his selfie stick. First one I've seen in a long time. Anybody that can believe that you can get this shit and that it's going to really affect you, unless you're already sickly or ill, is equally stupid with people that believe that carbon dioxide is an evil toxin in the atmosphere. It's the same level of scientific illiteracy that's being preyed upon and foisted and just trying to get people. I mean, you know, if people had any sense at all and any, even the most modest modicum of scientific knowledge, they would understand the ridiculousness of all the shit, and they couldn't possibly fall prey to it. But sometimes people